Remember Joel Helfrich? He was on the program 2 weeks ago, and he talked about the Rochester River School, the first vegan public school in the United States, and he was launching a fundraiser. Well, it's now up on crowdrise.com, and if you were curious about it, want to know more about it, or want to help, you can go to crowdrise.com and look for the Rochester River School and the Rochester River Foundation, and you can help there. I just told Joel I would give a shout out about that. I think it's a really important project, and I would love to see more schools, more schools actually incorporate some of the ideas that they are considering for the Rochester River School. Okay, good news, bad news. What do you want to hear first? Bad news. That's what I want to talk about first, because I like to end on a happy note. So perhaps you have heard about golden rice. Golden rice. Can you say golden rice? It sounds so lovely, doesn't it? I wonder who actually came up with that name. It sounds expensive. It sounds heavenly. Well, do you remember back in 2000, 16 years ago, the Time magazine cover back then said that this rice could save 1 million kids a year? And I remember learning from an organization called Amber Waves. They have a website, amberwaves.org. And you can read what they've been talking about for over 15 years about this genetically modified rice called golden rice, which was supposed to save 1 million kids a year. And guess what? It's still not happening. This golden rice, this genetically modified rice, is still years away from field introduction and may surprisingly to whom, may fall short of the great health benefits. And a new report came out a few months ago. And I just want to read some of the abstract because I'm enjoying reading it, rereading it, and mouthing all of these words. Here it is. Golden rice has played a key role in arguments over genetically modified crops for many years. It is routinely depicted as a generic GM vitamin tablet in a generic plant bound for the global south. But the release of golden rice is on the horizon only in the Philippines, a country with a storied history and complicated present and contested future for rice production and consumption. The present paper corrects this blinkered view of golden rice through an analysis of three distinctive rice worlds of the Philippine. The Green Revolution rice developed at the International Rice Research Institute in the 1960s. And golden rice is currently being bred by this institute and a scheme to promote and export traditional heirloom Landrus rice. More than mere seed types, these rices are at the centers of separate rice worlds with distinctive concepts of what the crop should be and how it should be produced. In contrast to the common productivist framework for comparing types of rice, this paper compares the rice worlds on the basis of geographical embeddedness or the extent to which local agroecological context is valorized or nullified in the crop's construction. The Green Revolution spread generic, disembedded, high-input seeds to replace locally adapted landrices, the heirloom rice, as well as peasant attitudes and practices associated with them. The disembeddedness of golden rice that boosts its value as a public relations vehicle has also been proved difficult to breed. Has also been the main impediment in it reaching farmers' fields, as it has proved difficult to breed into varieties that grow well, specifically in the Philippines. And finally, and I love this, somewhat ironically, the International Rice Research Institute has recently undertaken research and promotion of heirloom seeds in collaboration with the export scheme. Okay, so this report has discovered that golden rice isn't ready. Golden rice is difficult to grow in the Philippines. Golden rice is difficult to get the local people excited about this particular food. It's not working. And 15, 16 years ago, Amber Waves and other groups knew it wasn't going to work, and it's still not working, to the point where this institute that's been promoting it all this time is actually starting to look at heirloom seeds, because the foods and the seeds that are natural to that environment that people want to eat, people want to grow, that's what should be going on there. And it just boggles my mind that so much money has been going into creating a new food. And this new food, of course, they say they will give freely, but you know that ultimately they want to make money on this food. when there are so many heirloom varieties that are that naturally work in the area that would do so much better with support, different kinds of support. Maybe we could learn more about those heirloom varieties and why they may not be flourishing at a particular time and help them to flourish. This is what is one of the things that I believe is inherently wrong with GMOs today, where our favorite companies like Monsanto are creating these foods that have been genetically modified that they want us to grow and eat, and it is reducing the biodiversity of our planet, because when we choose their products, we're monocropping and growing the same foods. And growing genetically modified foods encourages today's current agricultural practices that we were talking about earlier in the program that deplete nutrients, deplete the soil of its life and its value and its richness, ultimately creating foods that really aren't healthy and don't do well in particular environments. And as I mentioned before, the book that I had read, An Unnatural Order by Jim Mason, which I read a long time ago and I really should read again, and I recommend it to you because it's an excellent book. It talks about food, obviously, and monocropping of food and the dangers that are related to it. And to the point where we're growing so much food that's enabling the population to grow, and yet we're still not getting food to everyone, which was the marketing behind Golden Rice, which was to help save billions of lives. And yet we still have a billion people starving. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. We can't believe the marketing hype, and it's the wrong path to go down. I would love to see, here's my solution, we really reduce and eliminate growing animals so we don't have to grow all those monocropped plant foods to feed the animals, to feed people. We free up lots of land that we can learn how to regenerate with beneficial insects. The Xerces Institute could help with that. That's Xerces. I love that organization. And wildflowers, and bring back all of these edible wild foods. We could do more foraging. We could have more locally grown food. It's a beautiful plan. Grow everything organically. I'm just taking in that image because it's a really lovely image. Okay, so I'm back to Golden Rice. So it gets crazy because in late June, you may have read that more than 100 Nobel laureates signed a letter urging Greenpeace to end its opposition to genetically modified organisms. And they were specifically encouraging that the golden rice, the strain of rice that these particular laureates said could reduce vitamin A deficiencies, which cause blindness and death in children in the developing world. Now, this is a terrible thing, blindness and death in children in the developing world. But golden rice is not going to solve the problem. The problem is bigger than that. The problem is politics. The problem is distribution of food, which is done unfairly. There's so many issues that are related to poverty, where people are paid next to nothing to grow food that ends up being exported so that the landowner can make money, and the farmers that are growing whatever it is that's being exported don't even have enough money to eat or grow their own food. It's the system that isn't working. We don't need golden rice. We need equality, and we need more education, and we need more diversity in people and in plants. And so when these laureates come along and tell Greenpeace to buck up and stop its opposition against GMOs, they're all so close-minded because they're not looking at the big picture. Sure, it's fun to be a scientist and get funding to discover new kinds of varieties and create something on your own that may have new properties that seem to be beneficial, and you feel really good about yourself. And a lot of these scientists feel like they're really doing great work. But unfortunately, I think many of them are short-sighted and are not looking at the big picture. Global big problem with green golden rice. So Greenpeace came back, and they came back with everything I've just been talking about, saying that accusations against anyone is blocking genetically engineered golden rice are false. Golden rice has failed as a solution and isn't currently available for sale, even after more than 20 years of research. So people are trying to shut down Greenpeace. And Greenpeace isn't necessarily my favorite organization because they haven't talked enough about the environmental devastation going on by growing plants to feed animals, to feed people. They could be promoting a more plant-based diet. That's slow going. But I do agree with them on being opposed to genetically modified food. Okay, that's golden rice. Then there was a lovely article recently in the New York Times called Eggs That Clear the Cages, But Maybe Not the Conscience. And this is a story that brings a lot of anger to me, and I imagine a lot of other people. We've talked about the difference between animal welfare and animal rights, and the animal welfarists are taking small steps which they believe are beneficial for animals. And one of those small steps was eliminating the cage that egg-bearing hens were crammed into, this tiny, tiny space. And they would their claws would grow over the wire. It was just a disastrous situation, and they encouraged getting rid of the cages so that the hens could walk around freely. Okay, and now we're learning, since this regulation was approved, a lot of places, a lot of companies have said, okay, we're going away from cages, and we're going to have hens that just can roam around inside the hen house freely. Well, of course, they're not roaming around freely to begin with. They have been engineered to be top heavy in their chests. Their legs are weak. They can barely walk around as it is. And there's no space for them to walk around. So there's no cage. But they're crammed in this high density population of filth. And this article is talking about how this change may not have brought about anything positive. These unfortunate animals are not in a cage anymore, but they can't really move, and the conditions may be more unhealthy. And so I'm disappointed that so many organizations like the Humane Society have promoted getting rid of the cage because they haven't gone far enough. We need to get rid of factory farms. We need to get rid of animals being raised in confinement, in hell, in order to make food for people. You know, I'm a vegan. I don't even think we need to eat eggs, period. But the first step is not to eliminate cages. The first step is to get rid of the factory. Hens should not be in a factory. They should be roaming outdoors freely, having fun with their families, pecking at each other. And, you know, if they happen to drop an egg here and there, if somebody wants to take advantage of that, that's one thing. But the factory has to go. Okay, let's talk about some happy things. Good news. Have you heard about Italy's five-star movement? This is a populist, anti-establishment, environmentalist, anti-globalist, Eurosceptic movement. The members of the M5S, the five-star movement, say that it's not a party but a movement and doesn't include the traditional left-right paradigm. Now, these five stars reference five key issues for this party or movement: public water, sustainable transport, sustainable development, right to internet access, and environmentalism. Love it. Don't you love this? The party also advocates direct democracy, the principle of zero-cost politics, degrowth, and nonviolence. They have condemned military interventions of the West in the greater Middle East, and as well as American intervention in Syria. Okay, so that brings us to the mayor of Turin in Italy, who is a vegetarian, Chiara Appendino, and she is pledging to promote vegetarian and vegan diets as a priority in her administration. This is really, really exciting. The five-star movement has a 62-page manifesto, and it calls for better urban planning, protection of public land, and this endorsement of a meat-free and dairy-free living is fundamental to the production of environmental health and the well-being of animals. That's what this new mayor in Turin is saying. I don't know if you've seen the story, but this is something to be excited about, especially with all the other junk going on in the news today. I love promoting these kinds of stories. People in places that are making positive change, we can do it. Even with all the craziness going on, there's a lot of good things happening. And in my world, there's a lot of good things happening. So as you may know, I live in New York, but I've been in the Bay Area now for 2 months. And we're staying with family and doing some work out here. I happen to have been invited to a surprise party at the Seascape Resort in Aptos, California. Seascape is a lovely resort. I can't say that I could afford to stay there, but it's nice to be invited to parties. And I'm almost ashamed to say I had a very smug attitude when heading there, because even though the invitation allowed me to select what I wanted for a meal, I think it was either beef, chicken, fish, or vegetable, I thought, I wonder what vegetable really means. And I was thinking, oh gosh, they'll probably come up with a pasta dish. And I was dreading it, thinking that it was going to be boring and unimaginative. Well, I told the server that my partner Gary and I were vegan, and she was totally on it. She served us beautiful salads to begin with those wonderful, colorful cherry tomatoes that taste like candy. And then the main dish came, and I was blown away. It was delicious, imaginative. I never had anything like it. And what I loved about it, too, and I'll tell you what it was, but it was made from Whole Foods. And it was a celebration of local produce, plant foods, colors, flavors, just incredible. So what was it? It was on the bottom of the plate is what I call a cauliflower steak. It was a big slab, like a slice. If you slice into the cauliflower and you make a big circular slab of it. So that had been grilled or roasted, I don't know, but it was at the bottom of the plate. And then on top of that was a big pile of sauteed spinach. And on top of that was two big slices of eggplant steak. And I'm not quite sure how they cooked that either. It was either roasted or braised or something, whatever it was just phenomenal. And on the side was a roasted caramelized onion. And all of it was in this rich roasted red pepper curry sauce. It was a blending of roasted red pepper, curry seasoning, probably some olive oil. It was very rich. And then there was this sprinkling of pistachio nuts and microgreens on the top. Is your mouth watering? I mean, it was a beautiful, colorful dish. Just gorgeous. And you can see it in my What Vegans Eat post. I posted pictures of it. I'm going to tell you what day so you can go and see it because it was really incredible. And so I'm thanking my grateful thanks to the chefs at Seascape, and I'm taking back any bad thoughts I had in my mind about what we were going to get. What Vegans Eat Day 529. You can see that lovely, lovely dish. I may try and make something like it myself. Why not? All right. The other thing I'm very excited about, this isn't healthy food. This is just fun. I'm glad it's out there. We went to a Giants ball game last night. A friend of mine had some tickets that couldn't be used, and Gary and I and his cousins got to benefit. We went to a Giants game at the AT&T Park in San Francisco. And while I was there, I started searching on my phone about the food that was available there. Well, I found out that the San Francisco AT&T Park is the most vegan-friendly of all, and there were lots of choices. The challenge in the choices was that the lines were long everywhere, so it was all about how much patience you had standing online. I interviewed about 5 years ago Johanna McCloy, who had created a website called Soy Happy. It's now called veggiehappy.com, V-E-G-G-I-E, happy.com. And if you go there, you can get guides to the sports stadiums all over the country and find out what they have and what's vegan friendly. And so I used that guide to guide me while I was there last night because I found out that field roast frankfurters are served at the AT&T Park. And they also have a beautiful edible garden where they've got all kinds of greens growing and you can get fresh salads there. This is really very encouraging, very positive. Now, a veggie dog is not the healthiest food, but it's wonderful to be able to go to a ball game, an American ball game, and enjoy a veggie dog. And that's just what we did. Happy ending. Yeah. Okay. Well, I want to thank you. Thank you for joining me. And remember, please visit responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's where I live. My What Vegans Eat blog is now into day 531. There's over 500 posts to help you and give you ideas about vegan eating. That's all I want to do. I want to make it happy and healthy and easier and delicious. So, have a great time. Have a delicious week. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. We'll be right back.